Hey, this is Daniel. Thanks for listening to DIY Money. If you haven't already, be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes so your friends know that they can learn from the show. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to another edition of DIY Money.
DIY Money.
What's shaking, Logan?
What is shaking? Right now, we got the
Wait, stop.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
I'm buttoning.
Oh.
I'm okay, buttoning. And the reason is, here's why. Let me tell you where my brain just went.
Okay.
We have a caller and asking a question from Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
We were just in Dallas.
We were.
I had you do something in Dallas that is a little out of your comfort zone.
We're going streaking! Yeah!
Yeah, we
get Tell us about it.
Yeah, we get up at, what, 6:30 in the morning?
Oh, 6:30.
It was early. I don't know. It was six. I think it was 6:30 in the morning.
I don't know what it was.
You woke up and you said, wait, you getting your shoes on? Like, it was not a question. There was no question about it. It was just like, hey, you getting your shoes on? By the way, a couple days earlier before we went on the trip, Quint sent me a text. He said, make sure you have your running clothes with you. I texted back to him and said, that is the text I was worried about. I expected it, and I was worried about it. So 6:30 in the morning comes. You getting your shoes on? Okay. Yeah, guess so. We're going out for a light jog. I don't jog. I don't run at all. I haven't for a very long time. Quint's like, oh, yeah, we'll just do this casual. We'll go down the block. We're at about a mile. I'm like, how long are we going here? He's like, well, we'll just do like a casual 3.1, just a 5K to wake up the morning. I thought I was dying. It was terrible.
I was sore
for a week.
But how did it – I mean,
it felt great.
Did it spark anything?
It did, actually. It felt really good. This weekend I plan on running another 5K in the morning. So I'm going to try to – get into it a little bit.
I love it. I liked it, but I was truly dying
and everything was sore.
So what you have to understand, if you've not seen, I surely by now, if you listen to the show regularly, you've seen a video or seen, I mean, Logan now blowing up the airwaves all over the media is just killing it. So I mean, here's a young fit guy. I mean, just, you know,
it's a different type of fit.
I get it. I'm not poo-pooing it.
Oh, watch your language, Mr. Dirty Mouth.
It's fascinating to me because it is different. And I always hear people say, I hate running. Like, I'll never run. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to argue with them. But in my mind, I'm like, that person has never gotten to where they could run 5 miles without dying.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not easy to get to be able to run 5 miles without dying. But if you can, if you cross that hurdle, it's, I think, magical. I mean, now, I just lost a lot of people out there in the DIY land. They're like, you're nuts. But I do. I just think it's an opportunity. It's just you and the world, and it's kind of like meditation. And I have people, they swear by meditation. It's their thing. And I can't knock it. Like, I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. that's your thing, because I know that the running,
that's what you get,
is my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I missed a day. Today's Thursday. We're shooting this, and I had a really nice run this morning. I'm also listening to the audiobook Living with a Seal.
Oh, yeah.
Which is about Jesse Itzler, I think his last name is, who basically hired David Goggins to live with him for a year or a month before David Goggins was really known as David Goggins. I think Jesse actually helped put him on the map. And it's very colorful, so this is not something you listen to with kids in the car, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to it and I'm like,
the motivation
oh.
is just like, yeah.
So this morning, like, I didn't run on Tuesday with my group. I mean, listen, I'm going to make an excuse. There was a lot of excuses. Kids were sick. I didn't sleep well. But now that's just an excuse. Like, I should have gone. One of our people that we run with, she flew home, got stuck in the airport, got home at like 1 a.m. and was at the 5:30. I am worthless. Like,
that
when
is
that happens.
Right there.
So this morning I roll up and I'm like, I'm running sick. Like, I had David Goggins on my shoulder like, you're running. And I've been hitting the gym with my middle son because he's got some injuries on a foot. So anyways, how did I get on this tangent? So I really want you to run.
Yeah.
I want you to
so
run.
So I'll tell you, we ran 3 miles or whatever.
My intention was to go out and run a 5 mile.
I know.
I was like, we're going to go out and run a
literally
two, very slow 5 miles.
I would have died.
And at 2 miles in, I'm like, we have meetings today. I can't have him die.
So I'll tell you, between the first mile was just brutal. I'm like, my body is not used to this. Like, what is happening? Between mile 1 and 2, that's where I was like, yeah, I could like this. Like, this could be enjoyable. And then from 2 to 3, I was dead. So there was that small period that I was like, yeah, I will do this again.
You got to push through there's an element there. Okay. Here's what I would encourage for what it's worth. Sign up for a race.
Yeah,
like
get something on the calendar.
And I mean, a 5K is okay. You ran a 5K.
Yeah.
So like a 10K or maybe a 10 miler or something, because
okay,
it'll force you to train.
Yeah.
And then you'll do it. You'll be in community with people.
Then be hooked.
And you'll be like, I love this. Now, all if right. you don't, I mean, this is the litmus test. Now, every runner listening to this podcast right now is in 100% agreement with me. People who hate to run, they think I'm an idiot at this very moment. But I think if you do it and you go through that and you legitimately are like, it's not for me. Okay, not for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of...
All right, after this episode, we will book a 10K.
Okay,
I love it.
All right, a 10K. Mm-hmm. Booyah. You heard it. You heard it. It's in the ethers.
It is out there.
All right, this episode is sponsored by Juul Financial. Visit us on the web, Joule, financial.com. We need podcast questions. Keep them coming. podcast@diymoney.org. That's podcast@diymoney.org. And as always, check us out on the social DIY Money Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and all the other things. We also have, you know, some new content going up on our website, diymoney.org. And we have a newsletter that you can sign up for. And we're really starting to, I always say this, and I don't, we have a lot of action behind it, but I do feel like this time we, whatever. We're going to prove it. We got action.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's also a lot of content of us talking about markets and things. There's some voice recordings of things we do on the radio and different content that we put out. So I encourage people to listen to that if you want kind of more of a current events style that we can't necessarily bring on a podcast that lasts forever. But on our social media platforms, we have a lot more current events and what's going on in the world.
Totally agree. All right, let's go to our question from Aaron. What do you got?
DIY!
Hi, DIY Money. My name is Aaron, and I'm located in Dallas, Texas. I've been a listener of the show for a little over a year now, and I've learned a lot through y'all's episodes. My question today has to do with an UPMA account. I know you have done a few episodes on 529 versus custodial accounts, but I haven't heard much about UPMA accounts. I wanted to get your take on if this is something I should look more into, or if I should just stick with choosing between a 529 or custodial account. I'd also like to know if you guys have any insight into how any of these might impact the child's ability to receive financial aid if they decided to go to college. For background, we have about $10,000 that we are looking to use to open whichever account is best, as we have a child joining our family this coming May, and we'd like to make the best choice all around for them if they decide to go to college or not, so that they could use it for starting a business, buying a house, or something else that they choose. Thanks so much, and keep up the good work.
Okay, Aaron, great question. I'll tell you, I find it interesting because, first of all, I appreciate the question, but when we talk about a custodial account, we are talking about a Uniform Trust to Minors Act account, UTMA account. Now, admittedly, I had to kind of go back into the archives a little bit, not of our program, but like of the World Wide Web, and do some research, because I personally didn't even understand the switch or when it kind of became universal, which it basically is, to use a UTMA account at a brokerage such as Schwab, which is what I do for my kids. So apparently, the very first type of account where a minor could own investments was a UGMA. I think it was in the 60s or something like that, there was an act, the Uniform Gifts to Minors Act, which allowed minors to set up an account naming a custodian, that custodian is a person, typically the parent or guardian, to oversee the account until they reached an age, which is actually state dependent. In the state of Kentucky, it's 18, that they then take ownership over the account. Now, the original UGMA wording only allowed for stocks and bonds and cash. However, at some point, and you can look it up, it was expanded to the Uniform Trust for Minors Act, UTMA, which allowed for more things to be incorporated in this sort of document or in sort of this trust, such as real estate, you know, jewelry, automobiles, or whatnot. Now, when you are saving in an investment pool for a child and you go to a custodian and you open an account, I'm almost positive, unless you're in a weird state, I think there are a couple states, and I'm going to, like,
think South Carolina.
And then, like, if you live in, like, Guam or something, I think is what I read. But they don't allow UTMA accounts. I honestly have no idea why. You probably still have to open up a UGMA account. But when you're doing it at a brokerage firm like a Schwab, et cetera, you are intending on buying stocks and bonds and mutual funds and cash and so forth. So, again, I think it's semantics that when we say custodial account, we are referring to your state's sort of designated type of account. In this case, where we're doing ours from, the UTMA in the state of Kentucky, that's actually what I'm referring to. Now, let's say you have a minor and they're, you know, going to be gifted an heirloom or property or whatever it may be. Well, under this same act, that's when a trust is established and it can be held in various accounts or maybe titled in the name of the trust for the minor's benefit. So what I'm saying is that outside of a normal brokerage account, a lawyer can be hired, a trust developed under this congressional act to hold other property, but it would still be under the UTMA designation. It might just be retitled that way. The deed, for instance, might be titled in the name of the trust for the minor, depending on the state, 18, 21, etc. At an appropriate age, they then take ownership over those assets. So in all of our, and I always like, the light bulb goes off when someone asks a question. I'm like, oh yeah, like, we really need to clarify that. In all of our dialogue, when I talk about doing custodial accounts for my kids as opposed to 529s, those have been UTMA, Uniform Trust to Minors Act custodial accounts. I personally am the custodian, even though that term is sometimes synonymous with who holds the money, like Charles Schwab, but they're not the custodian. I am the custodian in this relationship. They're the brokerage firm. They hold the money on all of our behalf, but I'm the custodian. At the age of 18, that money becomes theirs. In regards to college, that money is viewed as an asset on their balance sheet. Yeah. So it certainly can impact aid, and you may need to, you know, kind of dig, if that's your primary concern and you believe your family might qualify for financial aid, it might be an appropriate measure to do what Daniel does, which is saves for his children in an account in him and his wife's name and intention on giving that to them.
Yeah. So as far as when you're looking at FAFSA information, remember, if you're going to apply for the FAFSA as a student, they will look at your information. They'll also look at your parents' information. So the discrepancy there is, if you have a custodial account, the FAFSA will consider that assets of the child. If you have a 529 account, or like Quinn is talking about, if you had a joint account that you have earmarked for the child, that will be considered your assets. The child's assets actually impact the FAFSA a little bit more, But remember, there's pretty low thresholds on some things for getting actual financial aid from the FAFSA. Like if you were looking for a subsidized loan or something like that, those are pretty low thresholds. So you might be exceeding those anyways with some type of other account or with your income for your family, those different things. So I think that is maybe a concern. If you really are trying to decide between these accounts, you might want to look at that for financial aid. But if you're just evaluating between a custodial account versus a 529 versus doing a joint account in your name, I know we've said this a million times, Quint, but rehash a little bit why you decided to do custodial accounts or UTMA accounts for your kids.
It's easy. Some background. When I started in this business as a broker, commissionable sales broker, the one thing they told you is I was never an insurance guy. So if you start in the insurance side, they're like, oh, you meet a young person, sell them insurance. Right. Yeah. You know, on our side, it was if you meet a young person that has a family, sell them a 529. And I say sell them a 529 because we made commission on that. Mm. Sell them a 529. So, oh, yeah. Hey, Mr. Jones, you know, I noticed you and your wife just had a baby. Congratulations. You know, we'd love to talk to you about a 529 plan. Okay. Well, then I had kids. And I'll never forget, I'm in Florida. We have our first child, 2007. And my wife's like, hey, do you think we should save for Joshua? And I'm like, yes, we should. We probably should open a 529 plan. And then I was like, wait a second. Like, is that right? This is embarrassing, but I'm being fully transparent. I did what I was told. I was a good little worker when I started in the business. This is what you're going to sell. Go ahead and sell it. Okay, this is why I always give the benefit of the doubt to insurance guys because this is what they're doing. They're hard workers. They're listening to their bosses and their people, and they're telling them what to do. Okay, so then I looked into it, and I was like, wait a second. 529, I can only buy mutual funds, and it has to be used for college. At the time, it couldn't even be used for private education, like preliminary school. And it was college and college only.
Right.
So I was clearly, I mean, listen, my kids are going to be NBA, NFL. I mean, they're not going to, no, I'm joking. But I'm like, what if, it was not that. It was more about what if they don't go to college?
Yeah.
What if they, you know, what if we save all this money in mutual funds? I can't teach them then about stock. I guess I could give them stock outside of that. But, you know, I don't get the education aspect. But what if they want to buy a house? What if they do get scholarships? Okay, all those questions. And then I was like, I looked at the ESA, Educational Savings Account. Educational Savings Account gave me a little bit more flexibility because if we want to do private preliminary school, I could at least use it for that. But the limits on putting money in were very, very low. Mm-hmm. It was like $2,000 a year at the time. So then I was like, why wouldn't I just do a custodial? So I looked into custodial, and what you will read in here is you don't get the tax benefits. You hear this constantly. Well, you don't get the tax benefits. And then I was like, what tax benefits are my 14-year-old? Like, I'm not getting a deduction for putting it in a 529, so that's out the table. So what is the tax benefit? The more I read, the more I became convinced that I could use my brain to limit any tax at all. And to this date, he's 16 going on 17 in March. We've never paid a dime in taxes on this account.
Right.
And we have consistently, not as much as I should have, this is the one area that I missed out on, is I should have raised my basis every year, which means I should have taken gains up to the amount of the kiddie tax every single year, even if I didn't want to sell something, because he's not going to pay tax on it. And I could buy something else. Like, I could go from the S&P 500 to a total market index fund or something like that. Why would I do that? So that right now, and this is the small dilemma we have, is he's got a ton of gains in this account, and I'm trying to reduce risk. I do think he will get a significant amount of money for school. He's a very, very good student and a great athlete. But if we got to come out of pocket to buy a car or whatever,
you don't want to be 100% invested in stocks. Right?
Now, yeah. He becomes 18, that money becomes his. Guess what? I can have long-term capital gains tax up to a significant amount, and he pays zero.
Right.
So we went with the custodial account. Not to mention, I was able then to not just buy mutual funds or index funds, but individual stocks, which has been an educational system beyond. Finally, and this is true at 529, but when parents, grandparents, et cetera, want to give money, I can say, write them a check, we'll put it in their custodial account, which they never really did because they still wanted to buy them tchotchkes, which ended up breaking, whatever.
So, yeah, I think you threw out a lot of phrases there. There is something called a kitty tax that is on custodial accounts that you need to be aware of. So it's $1,300. The first $1,300 of gains that you take in that account, dividends and interest as well, is tax-free. So you would not, there's no tax on that. The next $1,300 is taxable at the child's bracket, which is in all likelihood probably 0% for a long time. But if you have $2,600 in gains or more, it falls under what's called the kitty tax, which means that money is then taxed at the parent's bracket. So you have to be a little bit careful of that. I mean, over time, like Quint said, you can tax manage that account. You can sell down things that are at a loss, offset them with gains, that kind of thing, to make sure that you're not going over that kitty tax amount. But that is something that's important to think about. I think the custodial account is great. I think that there's just some preference on whether you do a custodial account or an earmarked joint account that is under you and your significant other's name. And the determination between those two is really, are you comfortable with that money becoming the child's at their age 18 or 21 in a lot of states? And there's a lot of education and things that can go behind that. I also think that using a portion into a 529 is okay nowadays with some of the additional expansive rules that they've put into 529s, like you can use it for private high school education, secondary education, or the new law that you can now take money that is left over in a 529, like my own situation where my parents saved in a 529 for me. There's now leftover money in that 529 that I didn't use because I got scholarships. I can now roll some of that money to a Roth IRA each year, which is another benefit that just came out in Secure Act 2.0. So this is a great question, Aaron. There's a lot of different avenues to go down to, but kind of your original question, the UTMA account is the same thing as the custodial account that we talk about all the time on the show.
Great.
Good.
That's it. It's so fascinating to me, though, when somebody asks a question, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, we should probably
like,
say that.
Like, let me actually drill down. So obviously, Aaron, you are a detailed person. I love that. It's very important. I'm not that. I'm a generalist, which sometimes bites me in the backside. But I really appreciate the question, and hopefully we cleared a lot up for you. And again, it is an individualized question, and hopefully you find value in what we've shared or maybe the way we've done it in the past.
Aaron, congratulations.
All right. All Aaron did was sent us an audio file question to podcast@diymoney.org. That's podcast@diymoney.org. We used it on the show, so we'll send him a $25 Amazon gift card. All right, friends, remember the secret to wealth is pretty simple. Live on less than you make. Invest the rest. Do so for a very long time. Make it a great one.
Hey!
Thanks for listening to this episode of the show. If you want your question aired on the show, be sure to send that to us, and you'll get a $25 Amazon gift card.
This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only and is not intended as personal financial advice. Before making any financial decision, please do your homework and consult a financial advisor as needed.